Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akil, and for today's episode, we cover mental health issues, something that's not as discussed as it should be. So this episode tries to open up and be more vocal about that. But I have to give you a content warning on that because things got quite deep and got a bit emotional here and there as well. My guest, Stacey Cashmore, is a speaker, author, and software engineer, and currently a tech explorer, DevOps at Omniplan. She has a house made of Legos, which if you have a call with her online, you will see on her background. Quite awesome. I'll put the links to her socials in the description below. Check that out. And with that being said, enjoy the episode. Beyond Coding. Do you re-listen to whenever you go on stage to the conference talk?
Occasionally. Not as often as I should do, because I these headphones, I hate hearing myself.
So a lot
of the time I will skip bits. I'll just go through and I know how I think the talk went, and I'll have a look at the bits that I thought went really well.
Okay.
And I'll have a look at the bits that I thought didn't go well, and I'll try and kind of like, is my head correct?
Yeah.
Or am I completely off and I need to look at this in more detail?
Yeah.
And one or two I've done the whole way through. Mm-hmm. Generally, things like this. I will watch this one the whole way through because we're going to be talking about mental health, and I want to make sure that I am giving the message that I want to give. So that these ones are so personal to me that I make sure I go all the way through.
Yeah.
The more technical ones, I will do the important bits and check how that one's gone.
Mm.
And the ones that I'm not entirely happy with,
yeah,
I will listen to those all the way through.
Okay.
So I had that with .NET Rocks.
Okay.
I did an episode on static web apps because that's like my tech at the moment. And I was not feeling well at the time.
Yeah.
And I actually said to Richard and Carl in the recordings, like, if this isn't good enough for you to use, I am not going to be offended.
Okay.
And, you know, both of them went, no, this is great. We've got good stuff here.
Yeah.
Just like, you're being nice to me. And then I listened to it afterwards, and I'm still not entirely happy with it, but it was better than I thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, I recognize what you're saying. Like, I'm hosting this episode, and I've hosted the last 80, but I've also gone on as a guest on several podcasts. And I re-listen to myself as a host or even as a guest, and I'm like, man, I was really tired. Like,
yeah,
my interactions, my snappiness, they're just gone, or I wasn't feeling it, or actually I didn't listen to what the person said, and I went on a different topic.
Yeah.
Like, I can pick those out re-listening, but during the moment, I also kind of notice it, but not the severity of it.
Yeah.
There's kind of a disconnect there. I've also had, because the last episode I did was a Q&A one, and that one was me answering the questions that was sent in through the listeners. And when I listened back to that one, when I looked back to that one, I was like, this is like a different person. Like, it doesn't even look like me. It was way more energy. I was like, sometimes there's like a disconnect and I don't recognize the person I'm seeing on screen as that is me, but there's like a disconnect there. Do you have that as well?
I have that occasionally. Watching myself back.
Mm.
I also have it when I'm actually on the stage.
Yeah.
Sometimes you totally miss how the audience is picking up what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the worst experience for me, at the actual time, was NDC London this year.
Really?
I went, I gave my talk. It was in a big room. There were an amount of people there. It wasn't packed, but it wasn't empty.
Yeah.
So I think there was about 100 or so people in the room. It's a nice audience.
Good amount, yeah.
It was a beautiful stage, but the room was dark, so I couldn't see anybody except for the first row.
Yeah.
And the acoustics meant I couldn't hear anybody.
Oh, really?
So I'm going through my talk. There's a few bits where I make like a little bit of a joke about stuff.
Silence.
And yeah, you just get that silence and nothing back, and I can't see people. And the only person I saw laughing was my friend sitting in the front row. And awesome that she did that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's my friend laughing for
me. My supporter, yeah.
And it wasn't until afterwards I came off stage. And normally I am flying when I finish a talk.
Yeah.
And I came off stage of this one, and my friend came up and went, oh, how did that go then? I went, I've never felt this bad coming off of a talk. That was
really
easily the worst one I've ever done.
Okay.
So what are you talking about? That was fine. It's like, did you not hear the people? I went, no.
No.
And it's, it was only when people came up to me afterwards and started speaking to me that it actually hit me. It's like, okay, you need to believe in yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
Obviously, taking note of what the audience is doing is good, but you also need to believe in yourself a little bit more here and not just go, well, there's silence. This is dropping like a lead balloon.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, I was on stage and I was like, okay, I looked through the audience, like in my head, I know what to do. And the audience looked like a few people to me. Afterwards, after I was done with my session in the next round, I sat in the audience and I was like, man, this is a lot of people. I did not know. I'm happy I went first because I didn't recognize the amount of people that were in there.
I had that with a lot of people. The biggest audience I've ever spoken in front of was JS World in Amsterdam.
That's a good amount.
And that theater is huge.
Yeah.
It's a Theater Amsterdam and it's like a hangar sized theater.
Yeah.
It was single track, about 1,000 people. And for the first two sessions, I went and sat with a colleague on the back row. Mm. And I'm looking down over all of these heads just thinking, what have I put myself in for here?
Oh, no. Yeah.
But actually walking out and seeing all of those people, it gave me such energy. Mm. I don't know why. I don't know how. Yeah. But I'm really happy it did.
That's awesome.
We had really good lighting people there as well because obviously they know how the theater works. So I walked on stage. It was one of my first talks after the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the lights went down just as I started to talk. And it's like, well, I was going to say, it's great to see everybody in person again, but it's gone dark, so I guess I can't do that.
That's
and
hilarious.
They brought the lights back up so that I could wave at all the people before I got going. And it was just, it was such a fun start that it just put so much energy into you. And I didn't actually notice how big the audience was after that point. It was just a really fun audience to work with.
Yeah.
Even when GitHub crashed on me.
It did, obviously.
Obviously. It's like, it's what you want. It's GitHub throwing 500 errors when you try and go to the workflow page.
Yeah.
Perfect when that's it's your
like,
demo.
The timing on that is like impeccable. I've had that happen as well. It's a demo or conference. It's always that. Yeah, I love hearing that. You mentioned you still get kind of anxious or even like the amount of people sitting in the crowd can kind of be confronting, but you've had a lot of conference talks, right? You've had this many times. Is it like gradually going down or is it always like still there?
No, it's always still there.
Yeah, right.
It's that first, the 5 minutes before you go on.
Yeah.
It's I suppose that's improving. It used to be like half an hour before I went on. It was like, oh my word.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, we often send each other messages when we're stressed. We're like, why do we do this to ourselves?
Oh, yeah. I had that thought as well.
And then you open your mouth. I had it from my very first talk. Mm. I was in a room, smallest room in the conference, because it was my first ever talk.
Yeah.
It was packed. I think there was like one or two empty seats and that was it.
Yeah.
And that stressed me. When it was only a quarter full at the beginning, it was like, okay, I can do this. There's some people. There's not too many.
Yeah.
And then it was totally fun. It's like, what have all these people come for? Who am I to think I can say something to these people? And I was really stressing.
Mm.
And then I got the message to go or the signal to go. And I took two deep breaths.
Okay.
I was like, it is just so awesome to see everybody here. I can't believe you've all come to see my first talk. And that's it. Once I got to there, I just started to fly and I loved it.
That's awesome.
And that was a point when it was like, okay, I did this kind of as an anxiety thing, well, definitely as an anxiety thing.
Yeah.
But no, now I've done it once. I got to do this again.
That's awesome. I mean, I did it once and I was like, okay, I can see how people get addicted to this because the energy after that, the people coming up to you and being like,
yes,
awesome talk. I'm like, I don't know you, but thank you. Like that means the world to me. And I can see myself doing that more and I can see other people also doing that more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's very special. Did you always know you wanted to do that? Or how did you come up to your first kind of conference talk? How did that happen?
It kind of has to go back a little bit. It's I've had mental health issues my entire life since I was a child.
Yeah.
And it was in 2018, it got really bad.
Okay.
I was really struggling at work, really struggling at home. At work, I would just sit staring, not at the monitors, but through the monitors.
Okay.
And I say this every time somebody asks me about it. I don't know how I wasn't fired.
Okay.
Because I wasn't working. I was just sitting behind my desk and spacing out, just trying not to cry the whole day. At home, I just also really spaced out, and I had a young son.
Mm.
And I should have been spending more time playing with him. I took 4 hours a week off as Ouderschapverlof, if I've said that correctly.
That's the one, yeah.
To spend time with him, play with him, so that he's not just in daycare, so that I'm not just working. And around that time, I wasn't playing with him. He was entertaining himself on the floor with his toys. I was sitting on the sofa, and I just couldn't get myself off of the sofa.
Mm.
It was, I wanted to, and I'm screaming at myself in my head that I should do, but just nothing
came out. Yeah.
And with all this going on, I started to see a therapist. Took me a long time to get that energy and courage, but so pleased that I did. And it started to get me on the road to recovery.
Yeah.
And about this time, I also started to go to meetups to try and force myself to do things. Always a nightmare. I love the meetups. Mm. I love the content. If somebody comes up and speaks to me, I enjoy that too. But if nobody's coming up and speaking to me, then I just really not in a good place.
Yeah.
And then Tekorama came to the Netherlands.
Okay.
Huge conference held in a multiplex cinema. Loads of speakers from around the world that you just look at the lineup. It's like, I have to go to this conference. And I knew that I wasn't going to be healthy, but I also knew I wouldn't be healthy if I didn't go.
Yeah.
And I got there ridiculously early because it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours drive from my home.
Okay.
And I don't like being late. That's one of the things that sets off my anxiety. It really gets me upset. So I drove there with about an hour and a half to spare, just in case there's traffic. And I went that early, I actually missed the morning rush hour and got there with no traffic at all. So I was one of the first attendees to arrive.
Really early.
And then again, if nobody's talking to me. I didn't have a power bank, so I couldn't use my phone to try and entertain myself or at least distract myself from where I was. No books or anything. And I'm slowly getting more and more wound up.
Mm.
Got to the keynote in a huge, huge room in the Pathé Ada.
Okay.
And it sounds ridiculous, but that was awesome because it was dark. Everybody's looking at the stage and you can pretend you're just on your own. You're not with 1,000 people. You're just on your own. And that kind of carried on for the first couple of sessions. Smaller rooms, but again, it's all cinema. So when the speaker's speaking, it's dark.
Completely.
It's basically you and the speaker, and that feels fine.
Yeah.
And then we had the first break.
Okay. Everyone storms out.
Everyone storms out. A cinema is not built for every single cinema to empty at the same time into the hallways. It's built so that a cinema can empty and fill on a staggered basis.
Yeah.
And you've not. You've just got all of these things emptying. 1,000 people, the refreshments, the stands, the sponsors. And it was just, I was totally overwhelmed.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
I saw the Xperit stand, and I know people that work there, and I wanted to go and say hello, and I just couldn't. I literally ran off on the stand before anybody could see me.
Okay.
And I ended up hunched up against the wall with my arms in front of my face, completely breaking down.
Yeah.
Managed to run into one of the cinemas, which was empty because it was the break, thankfully, and got myself to calm down in the dark and the silence. But I know at that point that if that was my memory of the day, there's no way I'm coming back for day two.
Exactly.
It's, anxiety attacks are not fun, and I needed to do something. And I'd seen somebody walking around in a really nice swing dress, with a petticoat, full on 50 swing style, which is my style, but not what I was wearing in the day, because tech conference, jeans and t-shirt for practicality.
Yeah.
It's like, right, I'm going to give her a compliment. It sounds stupid. It's such a small thing, but it's big to me because I struggle speaking to individual people and starting conversations. And to me, if I give someone a compliment, it just sounds like I'm being a complete creep. So it's like, okay, this is going to be hard, but it's a positive hard.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we were both in the bathroom washing our hands, and she's a speaker.
Yeah.
Which made it even worse, because before I was a speaker, you have attendees and you have speakers.
Exactly.
Now I am a speaker? Absolutely not the case. No. Really, really not. But at the time, yeah. And I remember just taking a deep breath. It's like, I've just got to say, that dress you're wearing is absolutely amazing. And her name's Jessica Enstrom. Mm. She's awesome, awesome speaker and a great friend of mine now. And we had a little chat about style and fashion, and then she went off and did her session. I went off, and I thought that was it. I've done my bit. I've conquered something, and that was a really great thing to take at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Day two, I turn up actually in this outfit.
Okay.
So full swing outfit, because hey, if she can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And I feel good in this. It helps my mental health just being in this outfit, because you feel good about
yourself. Yeah.
So I was like, we'll do that. And I was walking from the car park to the venue, and some guy came running up behind me, tapped me on my shoulder, and said, I've just got to say, the session you gave yesterday was outstanding.
No way.
And I was like, I know exactly who you mean.
Yeah.
But it wasn't me.
No.
So I'm going to send her a message on Twitter and pass it on for you. I can see why you would make this mistake. There's not that many people that go to conferences in full swing dresses.
Yeah.
There's getting more, which is really cool.
Nice.
And we're both about the same height. We've both got red hair. So from the back, I can totally see.
Okay.
Passed the compliment along on Twitter, and she tweeted back, oh, awesome. I'm in jeans today because I only brought one dress, but I can't wait to see your outfit. I'll look for you over breakfast. And I thought, that's polite. And again, expected that to be the end of it.
Yeah.
But no, she did actually come and look for me over breakfast.
I love that.
She was wearing this absolutely amazing Spider-Man hoodie.
Okay.
Which even zipped up over the face, and it looked like just a complete Spider-Man costume.
One of those.
Awesome. Yeah. But we got chatting about, again, about style, mental health, about tech.
Mm.
And she just said, well, you speak about these things with such passion.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered being a speaker? I was like, no, I go to conferences and I attend them badly.
Mm.
I cannot speak.
Yeah.
And it turned out that she helps organize Svetuk in Stockholm.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, you should apply. The call for papers is open. Apply. Put in a placeholder for now. Don't stress yourself too much. Can't guarantee you're going to be picked. But, you know, give it a go. If you get picked, it's in a different country with people you don't know. The worst thing that you're imagining in your head, if it happens, you are never going to see those people ever again.
Yeah, you're completely anonymous.
It's like, so I said I would apply, which again triggered my anxiety, because now I've, even though it was just a friendly conversation, I've now said I'm going to do something.
Yeah,
so if commitment. I don't do it, I'm a bad person. So I applied. Hmm. Again, never expected to get picked. Didn't hear anything from it for a while, because as I've learned, CFP closing dates and the dates that you hear about whether or not you're selected are not necessarily next to each other. And I was at a restaurant with my in-laws on vacation a couple of months later.
Okay.
And my phone went beep.
Yeah.
And I
go, ah! Oh, nice.
In the middle of a restaurant, I gave out a little scream, and it's like, yeah, I've been selected. That's so cool. And then it dawned on me, now you've got to write a talk.
Yeah. You got to do it.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
So I think I must have put about 200-300 hours in that first talk. Mm. Learned so much along the way. And that got me to Stockholm. And
that is so cool.
It was absolutely not a planned thing in my life at all. It was total serendipity.
Yeah.
And seeing as how much I loved it, I'm just really pleased that it happened.
Yeah, I can imagine. How much did you get pushed into this kind of commitment of applying in the first place? Because for me, if I never wanted to be on stage and if I never wanted to do that, That's literally like me 10, 12 years ago. I would have been like, never, never, ever. But now that I've gotten a bit more comfortable speaking and I'm really passionate about some things in there, I'm like, I can see that. Maybe I'll apply, right? And when you get to that point, that application process gets easier. You might like postpone it and do it a bit late, but eventually you'll do it. And once you then get in, then you actually have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that kind of similar for you as well?
Well, for this one, it was just really, I had never even considered it in the past.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even on my radar of something that I should be interested in.
Yeah.
To be honest, my self-confidence and my self-worth at the time were on the floor. So that there's just no way that I'd have considered doing anything like that, because seriously, who am I to do this?
Yeah.
That conversation pushed me quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because it was the whole, I said that I would do something just in a conversation. And like you said, that made the commitment in my head. Even though there was no commitment there, that made the commitment in my head.
Yeah.
And it pushed me to have to do it. It still took me about a week after that to actually fill it in and do it.
Yeah.
Which was a really hellish week. I constantly got this now in the back of my head. It's like, you promised to do this.
You know.
You've got to do this.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to do this, but you've got to do this.
I recognize a lot in that. And I think it says a lot about your, first of all, you and also your values, right? If you make a commitment to someone else, it's completely different than making a commitment to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Because they know and you know they know and you said yes, so... Yeah. We got to do this.
Yeah, we got to do this now.
I recognize that 100%. But you touched on 2018 and being kind of in a bad place when it comes to mental health and just personal life and work life, kind of, I'm assuming, assimilating and both not going great.
Yeah.
Was it like one thing first and that led to the other thing not going great? Or can you kind of walk us through what happened there?
To be honest, it really goes back and starts in my childhood.
Mm.
I've had mental health issues since before I was 10.
Okay.
I had to do this with one of my therapists. We were talking about where it started, and I figured out I was about 7 or 8.
Okay.
When I first really started to struggle with this. Mm-hmm. And I have a huge issue with social anxiety.
Okay.
So that is the first kind of one that goes out there. So I can't handle being in rooms of people. Mm. So it's lucky I don't like go to big massive conferences or anything, because that would be awful.
Yeah.
But I really can't do being with a group of people. So the whole waiting outside of class before going into class would have me climbing the walls.
Yeah.
School discos, I always went to them, but it was always a nightmare. And I never felt good. And all of those other things when you're growing up, which should be nice, easy, simple things to do, just weren't. I never really fitted in.
Okay.
That also really doesn't help anything.
Yeah.
I had one or two friends at school. I wasn't friendless, but I didn't like have the big group of friends, and I wasn't part of... I just wasn't really part of any social group. I had one or two friends and that was it.
Yeah.
And I think as a child, you don't really notice what it is that you're doing. And it gets you, it does get you down, even though you don't recognize what it is. Mm. This is going to get really dark now, I apologize. But you do end up, well, I ended up with suicide ideation from the age of 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Which I never realized wasn't a normal thing until I was speaking to a therapist about it. And apparently not everybody does that. But it's a kind of thing that as I got older and I started to do things, it's like, you know, at some point I'm going to get the self-confidence. At some point this is going to stop. And you push yourself through... keep on trying things, keep on pushing yourself. And it was just 2017, 2018. I think I just ran out of steam.
Yeah.
And at that point, I don't know. I didn't physically collapse, but I definitely mentally collapsed.
Yeah. I've heard that happens first, right? That mentally you just can't handle it, and then your physical reaction comes after that.
Yeah.
When you've just been exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's my partner who really noticed something, and she just said, you've got to speak to the doctor.
Yeah.
I think it still took like 2 weeks after that before I actually got the energy and the nerve to call the doctor and to go.
Yeah.
The doctor was amazing. I know that not everybody's experience is the same here, so I feel so lucky that this was my experience.
Yeah.
But he did make a really nice joke, actually, at the end of the appointment when he'd written me the referral letter, recommended a therapist to me. So you've got to go away and find one. This isn't something that we can do. But I recommend talking to this person because for what you've got, he's known to be good. And I think I cried with relief, and he asked what it was. I was terrified of coming here.
Yeah.
So what did you think I was going to do? Say I'm not going to help you? And he's like, yeah, that is exactly what I was expecting you to say. I was just really expecting just a comment back of, this is all in your head. Which, you know, it is all in my head because it's in my brain, which is in my head.
Yeah.
But I was just expecting everybody goes through this. You've just got to suck it up and deal with it the same as everybody else does.
Yeah.
And I wasn't actually expecting to get the help. And it's been a hard slog since then.
I can imagine.
I've learned a lot about myself doing this.
Yeah.
One of the things I've learned is I'm not recovered and I'm never going to be recovered.
Okay. Interesting.
I have coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Which helps. And I accept the issues that I have, which, oddly enough, also helps. Not fighting it all of the time and knowing that, okay, in these situations, this is going to happen. So you need to do X, Y, Z to try and make yourself feel safe.
Yeah.
Taking those types of accommodations can really... It doesn't take the issues away, but it can help you cope with them.
Yeah. That's interesting. There's a lot that goes through my mind, but I mean, I talked to you before the show as well. And one of the things that stood out to me, I mean, even when we talked about going to conferences, right, you're just vibing energy. Even when we met in the hallway just now, like, you're amazing as a person and as a personality. So I would have never thought that that was kind of in your past, that you had to be confronted with that and become aware of that and acknowledge that it is kind of within you in that way and accommodate for it. Like, I would have never imagined that. But I think a lot of people have those little mental health issues, and they gradually are larger or smaller depending on the person and depending on what they deal with. But a lot of people also swipe it under the rug.
Yeah.
And I think probably that's when you went to the doctor. And you had kind of the expectation that they would be like, well, swipe it under the rug. Like, that's what everyone else does. But I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that's sustainable.
It's really not. I saw in the Scottish Summit, Donna Sarkar from Microsoft did an awesome talk for the ending keynote. And she made a really nice point in that talk. Everybody has mental health. Some people have mental health problems.
Yeah.
But everybody has mental health. And if you don't look after your mental health, then you're going to get mental health problems.
Yeah.
And because of my predisposition, because of what I've been through, I have some serious mental health issues. But the not looking after it and the not taking care of it is what made it get really bad for me.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you take care of it now? Or what do you do now to kind of keep that in a healthy state or in a healthier state?
What I do now is, one, try and actively think about what my current mental health state is.
Okay.
So I will know sometimes that, okay, I've got a depressive mood coming on.
Yeah.
Which can sometimes be a couple of hours, sometimes be a couple of days. And if I catch it early enough, then I can try and do something to either stave it off or to bypass it altogether.
Yeah.
Just try and figure out things which are going to give me dopamine hits. Mm. One of the things that my therapist taught me is, it's called the ABC model, but there's multiple different ABC models out there. So please don't Google it because you will not get what I did.
Yeah.
But basically it's figure out, again, what is something that you can do? Doesn't have to be big. Yeah. Just what is something that you can do? Do it and then see what happens in your head afterwards. And really something as simple as, we're going to clean the kitchen. Mm. Now it's like, okay, so we're going to spend time cleaning the kitchen, 5 minutes, get to the end of it. And it's like, okay, did I get something from that?
Yeah.
And figuring out those little bits of, okay, if I'm feeling bad, before it gets to the point where I can't force myself to do anything, force myself to do something.
Yeah.
So catching it early is one of the things that I can do. The other one is realizing my triggers. Mm. So being in big groups of people is still absolutely one of them. When I go to conferences, before my talk, I will make sure that I've got plenty of charge on my phone. I'll make sure that I've got my power bank with me.
Yeah.
An ebook. Obviously, if I'm speaking, I've always got my computer, so I can always have something to hide behind.
Mm.
I really love it when conferences have quiet rooms.
Okay.
Because they can, you're then not in the crowd. You can go in the quiet room, you can sit down with no expectations, and you can chill.
Yeah.
Speaker rooms are spectacular. Definitely one of the huge advantages of being a speaker is when you have a speaker room and you can truly just disappear.
Yeah.
That has helped my mental health at conferences so much. I know that I have issues with noise. Mm. So I now always travel with noise-canceling headphones if I know I'm going to be in a public space.
Yeah.
And it used to be really bad. It's like, I can't put my headphones on because that's so impolite. But it's like, no, I need to disappear. I'm going to put my headphones on.
Yeah.
I've just ordered a pair of loop earplugs, okay. Which they're not, they don't cut out all of the sound, but they cut it down.
A little bit, yeah.
So I'm going to try those. I've heard great things about those from other people. So I want to try those myself. And they're not ridiculously expensive. So if they don't work, I won't be happy. But it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
So those are the types of things that I try and do to keep myself grounded a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting thing that you said is, I come in and I'm full of energy, and it's until you appeared.
Yeah.
I was not.
No.
I was not happy in the car coming here.
Okay.
I always get nervous before doing a podcast or before doing a talk, but it's more than that. I was just really, it's like, okay, you've got to go and speak to people, and it's that scary thing in my head still.
Yeah.
When you came up and started the conversation, that takes that away quite nicely.
Nice.
I've seen it at other conferences, and it would be so cool if more conferences could do it. Mm. Different stickers that you can put on your badge, from stickers that say, nope, I don't want to talk to anybody, I'm really sorry, but I just need to be by myself here.
Yeah.
Stickers that say, I will talk to anybody and anything, it's fine.
Let's do it.
And one in the middle, which is the one that I would want, which is, I cannot come up to you and start a conversation, but please feel free to start a conversation with me.
Yeah.
If somebody talks to me, I can just talk the ground from underneath them. I don't mind talking. I hate myself for it afterwards. And after this podcast, I'm going to sit in the car and think, oh God, what did I just say? But I can do that if somebody comes up and initiates the conversation.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter that it's a big place, because I'm with somebody and we're having a conversation and we have that connection. And that, as a speaker, is also really cool because, like you said, you give your talk and people come up to you afterwards and talk to you. And that just helps me no end.
Yeah, it just works.
Yeah. So if anybody does see me at a conference, please come up and say hello. It's
Yeah, it's really interesting because, first of all, I recognize a lot. When I went to that conference and it was super busy and there were a lot of people, I sat on a couch and I just pretended to be on my phone. I didn't actually do anything. I was checking stuff, but I knew nothing was there just because I wanted to be alone.
Yeah.
And people came up to me and said, like, are you joining us? And I was like, in a bit, like, I just need a moment. And I think I needed to recharge my batteries. I need to be like, okay, prepare and we can go again. But that takes a lot of self-awareness, right? To know that, okay, you just need a moment right now and don't push yourself through this. And also, if I'm talking to strangers, I always or sometimes have regrets of not saying things or of saying I should have said other things, and I eat myself up about it. And when I talk to people, people don't recognize that either in a conversation or the way I present myself or even presenting. You know, when you meet a team for the first time or when you're in a room with strangers and you have to do your introduction round, that gives me a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
I check my pulse because my heart is beating. I'm like, okay, my turn. And then I do the thing and everything's fine. It's just, it gives me a lot of anxiety. I don't like being in that situation.
Yeah, I can totally go with that one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've accepted that that happens. Like if I know that it's there, that's the awareness. I acknowledge that it is there and I have my coping mechanisms. Like sometimes I take deep breaths and I know it's coming, but it takes a lot of awareness to be aware of your awareness to aware. Yeah. To be aware of your mental health state. And also the situation that you're in and how you react on certain things, and also accept that that is fine, right? There's no right or wrong in there.
No, and allowing yourself to do that too.
Yeah.
And I think that's why when I accepted that I am never going to get better, it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
Allowing myself to take those accommodations, which I wouldn't do before.
Yeah.
Just to help tremendously. Before I started therapy, it was like, okay, there are people in this world that have it way worse than me. Mm. And if I allow myself that accommodation, things like the headphones.
Yeah.
If I give myself that accommodation, then, you know, who am I insulting who really needs it? When you know what? I really need it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't let myself see that at the time. So once you both have the awareness and you are nice enough to yourself to accept that you can do the things that help you.
Yeah.
That is where things can start to improve for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned I am so bad at taking care of myself, right? I am horrible at receiving compliments. I am incredibly critical of other people and especially myself. And I don't like celebrate the small victories.
Yeah.
I don't give myself a gift. I don't give myself a little break. I have really hard time doing that.
Yeah.
Well, from my point of view, I give that to everyone else. I'm like, you've worked so hard, like it's time for a break, or you did a great job, or like, obviously you deserve that. But to myself, like I am just really bad at that.
Yeah, I recognize that totally.
Horribly bad at that. And I've also recognized that that is not healthy.
No.
Right? You need to take a break here and there. You can't go 120% all the time because that at some point that's going to break you. And I don't think it has broken me. I think I've had moments where I had to be like, okay, it's time to like step down, actually take a break, say no to things, which I'm also struggling with.
Yeah.
But then afterwards, I'm so happy I did. So happy that I said no. That I said, no, I actually don't want to do this, or no, we can't switch time-wise because I have plans and like I planned for this. Like I would say no in the moment, feel horrible, and then be so happy afterwards that I did so.
Yeah.
And yeah, it takes time. It takes awareness and experience to be like, okay, these are kind of my boundaries and stay within those for yourself, right?
Yeah, it's that's super important. It's something that I haven't quite got yet. I have been so busy this year and I feel I'm really privileged because I have been so busy this year.
Yeah.
But at the same point, I've also been over the top. Yeah. I have said yes to things that I shouldn't have said yes to. Yeah. And it's like, well, wow, you've asked me to do this. Well, I can't say no to you because then I'm a really bad person. And so I was planning on doing one or two things a month maximum.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up doing 4 or 5 things a month sometimes.
That's a lot more.
That's a lot more.
Yeah.
And I was exhausted. And I've only just recently started to say to people, no, I can't do that yet.
Yeah.
So I think I've just had a request, you know, would I join somebody for, I've forgotten what it was for, to do something online. And I said, I really want to, but not this year.
Yeah.
It's like January, February, fine. But I have, on the 1st of December, I've got one final meetup, and then I am done until the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I am... Then I'm done until the end of the year. I'm going to start a streaming, but I'm done until the end of the year, except for my stream.
Yeah,
exactly. And see, I'm not good at this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I recognize that as well. I think it comes because, first of all, those things that you do probably give you a lot of energy, yeah, and you love doing them.
Yeah.
That's the same for me, right? It comes from a place of love and a place of passion. If I could, I would say yes to everything, squeeze it as in a short time frame as possible. Except I know that doesn't work out, right? No. I can't give my 100% to all those things in that short amount of time. It doesn't work.
No. At some point you get tired, you need to stop. It's...
Yeah. Recharge those batteries. Like,
yeah. It is another issue that I have. My therapist actually told me once to turn up. He gave me an order.
Yeah.
Only time he's ever done it. Because he said, I am not here to tell you anything. I'm here to talk to you and help you find out what you need to do.
Yeah.
But one session is like, no. I don't want you to do anything in the evening until the next session.
Yeah.
I want you to give yourself a week off, see how that feels. And I had one of the biggest breakdowns in my life that week.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting on the sofa and my head's still going 1,000 miles an hour. Been in the Netherlands 23 years, 1,000 miles an hour. And... I wasn't doing anything with it. So I was just on the sofa. My anxiety was just getting higher and higher. And I think I had the session on the Tuesday. By the Thursday, I was upset. And by the Friday, I was just absolutely collapsed.
No way.
And the session that we had the week after, it was, how did it go? I've never felt worse.
Yeah.
And we had a chat about it. It's like, yeah, you are... I'm not going to use the language he used because otherwise you can't put the podcast out. You're in trouble if you do and you're in trouble if you don't.
Yeah.
You are going to have burnouts because you can't work 8 hours a day and then do things for 6 hours in the evening.
Yeah, doesn't work.
7 days a week. That's not healthy. But apparently I also can't not do that. Physically, I can't do the work all the time, and mentally, I can't not do it because I need to keep my brain occupied.
Yeah.
And please say, that is slowly improving.
Okay.
But it's something that I really struggle with. So that was kind of okay. I either have to accept that I'm going to have a breakdown maybe once or twice a year and try and catch it before it hits and do something.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be climbing the walls every evening and then I'm going to have a breakdown that way. Yeah. So I opted for the breakdown a couple of times a year.
Exactly.
And oddly enough, that has been a great choice.
Okay.
Because I can feel in advance when it's going to hit. And you can try and temper it at the time. And trying, okay, like, I know I'm going to burn out. Now you need to calm down. It's like, right, we're going to do this. We've got these commitments.
Yeah.
And after that, you're going to build Lego. You're going to watch a Marvel movie. You're going to go for a walk through the dunes. You're just going to do something which isn't that. And try and make sure that you, even if it's not physical rest, even if you're still doing something to occupy yourself, you're going to try and make sure that it's not work, in air quotes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's really, really cool that you have that kind of self-awareness. I don't think I have that yet. I do have like pillars in my life, in my professional life and in my social life, my girlfriend, my mom, like my siblings, my friends, that are like, okay, like you said no a bunch of times, you're doing all these things like take care of yourself, or they keep me in check in that way, or they challenge me in that way as well. Aren't you taking too much? Like, should you have said yes? Because this is all back to back to back. And that for me are kind of my guidelines and my checks in my personal life. Because I know if I wouldn't have those, then I would run into a wall and have to like get up and learn from that experience. So I'm really happy I have those like people in my life. And I think that's needed and healthy as well, both in your professional life
and absolutely. In your
personal life. Yeah.
It's my son's managed to help me. Absolutely broke my heart. But he's managed to help me a few times. Just by point of view, when my son says to me, are you going to be home? Are you home? Are you home now? Have you got to go again?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm doing too much.
Exactly. Yeah. If that's their expectation.
Yeah. It's like okay, no, I have this, and then I'm not going to do something for X amount of time.
Yeah.
And I did actually say no to a talk in the UK in December. Mm. It's like, okay, I would do it remote. I don't mind doing it remote. My son's going to be in bed. I can go to my studio. I can give this talk. That's fine.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not going to be in person. And they really wanted somebody in person. So awesome. It's like, let me know if you've got another slot next year that you want filling. I would love to do this talk. But no, not now.
Yeah.
I am home now until the end of January.
I like that.
That is the promise that I gave to my son.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to break that promise.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I invite a lot of people on as a guest on the podcast. And some people tell me like, okay, this is not like I can do it from X day. I can't. I have way too many commitments. And I'm like, okay, these people know their boundaries. Like, this is very healthy. I'm not going to push. That's it. I appreciate their feedback as well. And I'm not going to overstep those boundaries.
No.
I'm not going to push in that way either.
I think that's a really nice one to do. I did have one conference this year which did overstep the boundary.
Yeah.
And it caused me to say yes to something that I should have said no to anyway.
Yeah.
But more than that, it meant that when I had to say no after all, I just felt truly awful. And I regret that I didn't keep to my boundaries as I should have done. And I'm actually really angry that the conference didn't take my initial answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was like, okay, I don't know if I can do that date. It's like, let me get back to you.
Yeah.
And they kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. And it's like, well, fine, I'm just going to say yes, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And it was I should not have said yes. I feel bad because I dropped them in it because I said yes and then I couldn't go. But at the same point, I was brutally honest up front and then carried on being pushed to it.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that you recognize those boundaries and you don't push people to it, well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No, I appreciate that. And I think my sense of appreciation is like that because I have a hard time doing that myself. So when other people do that, I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to be able to do as well when it gets to that point.
Yeah.
Where I have too many things that I can just say like, no, then and then is better because otherwise I can't. And that's it. There's no if or but. Like, that's it. Take it or leave it. Otherwise, we leave it. That's also fine. Yeah. I've really enjoyed this conversation so far. One of the lingering questions I have is, I think if you have mental health issues, if they're small or big, taking that first step and seeking help, right, going to a professional or going to your partner or friends and family in that way and talking about it, I think that is necessary to get out of it or to get that sense of awareness, to get that mirror in front of you. But I also think that's my assumption in there, that a lot of people would struggle with that or see just an uphill battle with that.
Yeah.
What advice would you give for people to kind of climb that hill in that way?
I think, first of all, absolutely. The reason why I talk about mental health at conferences, the reason why I said to you, yeah, I would love to come on your podcast and talk about mental health, is because it is such a taboo subject that it makes it hard to get started.
Yeah.
I knew that I needed help probably 6 to 12 months before I asked for it. But I was just terrified of actually saying to somebody, I think I have this issue. So I think it's outside of what the person can do. For society as a whole, we need to start removing that taboo. And I've seen it more and more at conferences. Excuse me. I have seen it in general discussions, and we're going the right way.
Yeah.
There's a long way to go, but we're going the right way. That taboo is so slowly starting to be eroded. For the person themselves, the best thing that I can suggest from my experience is find somebody that you can trust with it.
Yeah.
And that is such a hard thing to do. I have two groups of friends. One group tried to be supportive, but the way that they were supportive just made it 10 times worse for me.
Okay.
And one group was actually supportive.
Yeah.
And the people that made it worse, they really weren't trying to be nasty to me. I have had the people that were nasty. But these people, they didn't appreciate what they were saying.
Okay.
So they were the people that would, at the point where I am struggling to even show up for something, would still say, you just got to push yourself to do it. The more you do it, the easier it gets.
Yeah, they didn't respect your boundaries.
No. And it's like, okay, so I pushed myself to do it and I made myself worse and worse and worse. And I left numerous work functions in tears because I was trying to, I don't know, live up to people's expectations is maybe not quite it, but it's about the best description that I can get into my head at the moment. Yeah. But you know, the people that said those things, smile more. If you smile more, then you'll feel better because when you smile, it releases dopamine. It's like, honestly, I'm really pleased that for some people that works that way, but no, if you have some serious mental health issues, smiling doesn't release dopamine. It actually does the opposite because you smile. You do everything that people tell you should be doing to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, and it's not working.
And it doesn't work. And it's like, well, what the hell is wrong with me? Everybody's saying if I do this, it's going to improve, and it's not. What is it with me? And that just really drives you deep into yourself.
Yeah.
The people that you need to find to talk to, the people I needed to find to talk to, were the people that actually listened and didn't offer solutions, but asked more, what can we do?
Yeah.
Everything that works for me, all the things that I've said, all the things that I've said at talks, I always say the same thing. It is my story. This is what worked for me.
Yeah.
It might not work for any other person on the planet, but it's what worked for me. And you need to find your own thing. So if you're speaking to somebody, then you need somebody who's going to say, okay, what do you need me to do?
Yeah,
what can I do to support and to help you? I have people that it's like, okay, what do I need to look out for so I know when something's happening? And then what do I need to do at that time?
Yeah.
And they are the people that can provide you with the most support.
Absolutely.
So it's, for me, aside from just getting that energy and courage to actually go to a doctor and say, I have mental health problems, I need help.
Yeah.
The other thing is just make sure that you, if you have someone that you're talking to, make sure that it's somebody that is going to be there and do the things that you need and not the things that they either want to do to help you or think that they need to do to help you rather than actually listening to you and helping you.
Yeah, exactly. They need to help you in your own way, right? Not what they think you need, but what you actually
exactly.
need.
Exactly. And that's different for everybody. I gave a talk at NDC Oslo. Hopefully it's going to be on YouTube soon because aside from the fact that, what's the word I'm looking for? Embarrassed. I am embarrassed that I spent half an hour on stage almost in tears, but it was such an important thing for me to say. And I have no idea where I was going with this. I warned you this was going to happen.
No worries.
I get halfway through a sentence and it's gone.
Yes,
me and my co-presenter, Denny.
Yeah.
Denny de Klerk. We have totally different needs.
Okay.
He needs crowds and bustle and energy.
Yeah.
And that would drive me absolutely under the floor if I'm in the middle of a depressive mood or anxiety attack.
Yeah.
I do not need that. I need the opposite of that. I need somebody just to be with me. They don't necessarily have to say anything.
Yeah.
I might be incapable of talking to them, but I need them to be there so I know they're there. Whereas he needs that energy and social interaction and everything else. And that's why we decided to do the talk together, because we are just so different, but we both have the same mental health issue. It's just what we need.
It's different.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
So we actually bounced it off of each other quite nicely with the whole, okay, so you needed that. I think he said, you know, COVID was a nightmare for him because it meant that he had to be alone.
Yeah.
COVID was awesome for me because I didn't have to go into social situations. I appreciate that it was a horrible thing for the world and tragic. But for me personally, being locked up in my office, in my home,
yeah, that your gave comfort.
Me so, yeah, that totally put me in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So having somebody that can listen to you and give you what you need, whether that's silence, whether that's telling you to get over yourself, if that's what works for you, really not for me. Please don't do that to me. or just talking to you normally like nothing's going on, just so you have that sense of normalcy. Whatever you need that person to do, if you've got somebody that can be that support, that is going to be absolute gold for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you need. And then taking that first step is a lot smaller in that way, right? If you trust that person, they're also going to react in the way that you expect them to.
Yeah.
Because you have that trust built up.
Yeah.
States, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. I think I agree with you when you said we're opening more up about it. It is not a taboo subject. It shouldn't be, at least. And I think we're trending towards the better in that way. So thank you for coming on and sharing your story as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Is there anything you would still like to share with our audience as we're rounding off?
No, I think I've pretty much covered everything. It's look after yourselves and...
Yeah, for sure. Once you have that link of the conference talk in Oslo, send it to me. I'll look at it. And also, I'm going to put all Stacey's links to her socials in the comment section below. Check her out. Let her know you came from our show. And with that being said, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.